Okay, so welcome to Journey Within with myself, Nigel Paul Miller. Today I'm joined by someone I would consider to be a revolutionary. Her name is Helen Glover. Helen is the host of the groundbreaking male empowerment podcast, The Modern Masculine. The Modern Masculine encourages men to find the strength to embrace their vulnerability through the cultivation of emotional intelligence. Helen's mission is to help men become more authentic versions of themselves by tapping into the power of not only the masculine, but also the feminine within, helping them to achieve emotional balance and harmony in how they show up in the world. She is also the founder of The Gentleman's Secret, a coaching and lifestyle brand helping single professional men create rich new lives after divorce. Welcome to Journey Within, Helen. How are you?
I sound fabulous.
You are fabulous. So happy to have you on today. I'm so happy to have you on today. I've been waiting for weeks to finally interview you, so here we are. Better late than never, as they say. So yeah, I mean, I suppose at the start there I was introducing you as a revolutionary, and just because of the fact that you've kind of created a podcast to empower men. Which is very, very unusual and cutting edge, you know, for this day and age. So I'd love you to just kind of go into that and go into kind of what sparked the fuel, you know, to kind of ignite the passion that led you up to the point of creating this this new kind of movement.
I don't know where the real deep passion comes from. It's just there. And I think once I located it, it just went for it. So it's obviously always been there, I think. And so my mission has really been along that journey to find what I came here to do. So for me, I've had both negative experiences with men and with women. I don't think that there is a gender problem. For me, it's never been a gender problem so much as a people problem. I think it's like anywhere, there are lovely people, there are not so lovely people, and they're downright mean people. So we encounter them everywhere, and our experience of ourself is how many of those we bring in, right? So as I've moved through my life and had different experiences, and I've been enlightened then as to my patternings with each sex. So I've been like, oh my God, so I'm playing this pattern when I'm dealing with women. Oh my God, so I'm playing this pattern when I'm dealing with men. And so I've gone on my own journey with the masculine, feminine within me. And also I've been very, I've had lots of different things to handle, lots of different things to move through. So I've had to really unite both sides of who I am to really be able to be a mom and to be soft and beautiful and loving and to be still and to be in my masculine. For me, that means to be driven, really driven and kind of fast. You know, and I get that women multitask, but I find that the power that drives me to go when I'm really knackered comes from that masculine energy. That's how I feel about it. I know it's not like that for everyone. So when I have dove into the different sides of myself, I've found that I've been surrounded by the issues of that particular sex at that particular time. So when I've been dealing with stuff around women, I've ended up being around loads of women. When I've been dealing with men, same deal. I got thrown into a few things where I realized I had loads and loads of men friends. And then all of a sudden my male friends disappeared because they got partners and nobody really liked having me as a best friend of their partner, funnily enough. So I ended up then I had very few friends and then I had women friends and then I realized I had no men friends. And so as I've gone through, I ended up at one stage I thought, yeah, I really want to delve into stuff after my divorce. I was like, yeah, I really want to feel empowered. And I started searching out women's circles. And I I do lots of poetry. I'm a real creative person. So I really connected in with that divine feminine movement that was happening at the time. Mm-hmm. And I do lots of women's circles, all that kind of stuff. But while I was in that space, I heard a lot of, but men this, but men that. There was a lot of men, enemy, enemy, enemy. And I was like, not really. And so as much as I love a lot of the women that I've met in this space, I didn't really like a lot of the narrative around men because I thought it was counterproductive to be in a healing space as a feminine, but to be finger pointing and putting any of my issues onto the opposite sex. I thought, hang on a minute, I really feel that we need an equal voice. That's the whole point of feminism. The feminism movement should be about complete equality of understanding and feeling each other's pains. So in that then, when I speak to men, you'd hear the, oh, well, you know what women are like, blah, blah, blah. And I'd be like, well, you know, not really. So for me, there's just a really big wound between the two. And that saddened me because I feel as much as I can, like I blabbed on at the beginning about kind of, you know, finding that balance for myself between the masculine and feminine and then being in both camps at different times, I feel it needs to be seen on a wider level. And I saw things like Me Too and Rise Up and, you know, all of the stuff. And I agree with it. There's no doubt about it that I agree with that. But I also see then that there's a resentment for men feeling uncomfortable about how to show up in that space. And I see women going, yeah, you know, it's their fault. We're in danger because these people. And I just thought, when I spend time with my male friends now, I've got this really beautiful balance between really amazing women and really amazing men in my life now. When I listen to both people coming across in a balanced way, we're both saying the same things. So okay. I'd have a guy that I know, really hardworking guy, awesome, father, really lovely morals, you know, and he said, oh God, I'm kind of stressed because I'm trying to do this and I'm trying to provide for, you know, to do this for my kids. And I'm really worried about my business and, you know, things are really on top of me. I'm feeling a bit overwhelmed. And I was like, same, you know, same. Mm-hmm. So I thought we should be listening to what men really feel like. And there's a lot of space and a lot of kind of overpopulation of how women feel and a lot of room for women to voice it. But I don't hear many men getting the opportunity to voice how they really feel. And I thought, wouldn't it be amazing if we actually start to hear the stories of men? Wouldn't it be amazing if we start to hear the sadnesses and the upsets and the difficulties of men? And as I went into that, it just grew and grew and grew about, you know, them saying like, yeah, I don't know how to show up to these women. They terrify me, you know, or I love strong women, but I get emaciated, you know, or look, I want to be vulnerable, but then I'm seen as weak. Like they want a strong guy, you know, and it's this, I don't know what to do. And I was like, I totally get that. I can imagine it would be really complicated. So in turn, women are asking for something that they are saying they don't believe exists. And I believe it does exist. So it was about kind of opening the communication with the people who speak the least, who get heard the least, who aren't telling their stories. And something incredibly beautiful has come out of that, that just blows me open every time I speak to somebody, every time I speak to a man on my podcast, I feel blown open. I feel honored. I feel humbled. I feel like I'm witnessing something extraordinary. It's amazing.
That's so beautiful. Like, I mean, it's almost like you're kind of transcending that polarity and that kind of polarization that has been kind of created, you know, from the opposites you know, the opposite sides that kind of, you know, they want to place blame on the other side and say, oh yeah, it's because of, you know, because this man screwed me over, because this woman screwed me over. And I've done it myself in my life, you know? And I think it's a natural human response to, you know, being emotionally damaged. You know, and you kind of tend to paint a brush of generalization, you know, across a certain spectrum. And obviously in this case, it's male, female. But at the end of the day, as you said, when you get into deep conversations with someone on your podcast and they open up to you, it becomes very apparent that, yes, we all go through the same thing. We all feel undeserving. We all feel unworthy. We all feel like we've been hurt and betrayed and you know, that type of stuff. And we all feel pain as a result of those experiences. But at the end of the day, we all want the same thing. We all just want to be validated. We all want, and we all just want to be loved. I mean, that's essentially what it is at the core level. So when you say that you've kind of, you know, experienced these, you know, beautiful moments with, you know, people that you've interviewed and stuff like that, can you kind of go into that then? What sort of transformational perceptions have you experienced as a result of a man opening up to you about his kind of worldview?
Yeah, well, in the past, I've also coached men with PTSD and adjustment disorder and other things that have returned from active duty. So the depth of compassion for me really grew huge at that time as well, when I could see society saying all of this stuff about our war veterans and we're going to do all of this and we're all so beautiful and lovely towards the fact that they're all feeling depressed or they're this or there's a suicide problem and we're going to, you know, revere them and support them. I'm sitting in a room with somebody who's really, really feeling the excommunication from military. It does not look like that in real life. And that's not how they feel. They don't feel held by society. They feel completely isolated and alone. And as much as we can bang on in the media about supporting, we're actually not. And so that's where I started to feel that compassion in the fact that these guys had nowhere to go with their mental health issues, even though we said that we understood. And so I could see as they had somebody who held space to say, I actually really do care about where you're coming from. And from my own experiences, I could put in words that they were missing because I could see and feel intuitively where they were coming from. And they would go, yes, you know, and there'd be this like release of like, oh, thank God, you know, that I can feel understood and I could see just this relief. And so when I see this relief where men feel like they've connected to a woman, where they feel understood by a woman, a lot of men are carrying female wounds and a lot of women are carrying male wounds. So for me to go through that beautiful healing through whatever it is that they're going through, you're also repairing that female wounding for the man, and the man in turn is repairing whatever male wounding we have as women. So there's this beautiful connection that goes on, that interchange through just holding space. They're not being talked at, they're not being spoken to, they're not being directed on how to think, they're not being told what they're saying is wrong. Somebody's saying, I get where you're coming from and I can hold it and I can offer compassion to you because that must feel really shitty. And they just go, oh, thank God.
It's amazing though, isn't it? It's just understanding, like the power of mutual understanding, like two people understanding each other and being able to express empathy towards each other's situations or experiences that they've been through. And it can just be something so subtle as that, as you saying, yes, I know where you're coming from, or you actually genuinely knowing where they're coming from. They kind of pick up on that, whether it's subconsciously or whatever. But yeah, I mean, understanding it, it's just such a powerful, powerful thing. I'm blown away by that, Helen, I have to say, because it's such a transformational thing for people to be able to experience that. You know, and especially people who've suffered from PTSD as well. I mean, yeah, I mean, how the hell can the majority of people understand that predicament when most people never go through that?
Mm. Oh. And in the interviews that I'm doing, I'm speaking to men who've had these amazing stories, but also men who are involved in men's work, in men's groups, and they're coming from their own history as well, you know, and talking about where they've been with their masculinity and where it's led them and the different roles that they have felt. I've spoke to people about the stress of financial gain, you know, the state of masculinity through finance. I've spoken to guys about like the violent streak that they feel was needed as a man, that they had to be really, like one chap I interviewed, and I was taken down by this conversation, if you know what I mean. I was so humbled by it, his honesty and his sharing about how he was congratulated for really, really hurting a guy in a fight.
Wow.
By all his older male peers, mm. you know, like welcomed him into the fold when he was put into a position where he had to fight.
Mm.
And for me, I could, and like such an impressionable age, and you can see where these stereotypes have been driven in. You can see where guys have come from. And so, you know, as much as women are coming with these, you know, I call them the witch wounds, and they're there, they're ancestral, they're in our DNA. There's this kind of longing to be heard and not burnt at the stake for our ideas, you know.
Yeah.
But equally, men are coming from battle. And so when we say, you know, just be vulnerable, it's like saying, yeah, you know, just slice your hand off. It's really like, it's they look at you with this kind of terror of like, have you any idea what you're asking me to do here? And I don't think we get it. I don't think as women, we understand the depth of terror we're asking them to reach, to say just be vulnerable.
It's like asking them to take off their strength that they've built up as defense mechanisms over the years, that they've had to do in order to survive socially. Asking them to take that off. Yeah, I mean, it's even myself as a man, like listening to this, I'm like, yeah, I can relate to that 100%. You know, because we as men, we build up so much of our character around the core concept of strength, and the ability to kind of endure and the ability to, you know, adapt and not allow our emotions to get the better of us. That you know, a lot of ways of dealing with that is emotional suppression. You know, it's kind of fobbing things off and going, don't worry about it, you know, get over it, you know, stop being such a pussy, or, you know. So yeah, I mean, it's amazing. I can totally relate to what you're saying there.
There's another chap that I spoke to. He went into elite sport, you know, and he was a machine, so successful, like he made it, but he was dead inside. He said, I just got to a point where he said, I just cannot do this anymore. And the fact that he was like this big sporting star meant that nobody cared about him having problems, because they were like, how can you have problems? You're a football star.
Exactly.
And so he didn't even have a right to feel anything but that.
Wow.
And that was extraordinary as well. And another chap I spoke to about abandonment, and for me, I was like, wow, male abandonment, you know, of course. And so all of these beautiful exposed people, like literally trusting me in this space to be honest like this, and to share the depths of this, you know. And I just think, wow, you know, what an honor, really, to hear these stories and to get these insights and perspectives. You know.
Yeah, it really is. And I mean, especially abandonment as well. I mean, I think that's why, you know, obviously men and women alike, it's like that's how you have, you manifest so many problems in relationships in adulthood because of abandonment issues that you had from when you were a kid. I mean, for example, my real dad ran away before I was born. So I had abandonment issues from a very, very early age. And that obviously played out in my relationships when I was older. So it's this type of stuff that you're kind of working with, Helen, is such tender topics, and they're so, you know, just on a level of vulnerability that most men haven't been willing to kind of face within themselves. And, you know, I suppose you were talking before about kind of shadow work with regards to facing, you know, your own darkness and stuff like that. When we had a conversation a few weeks ago. So can you kind of go into that then, how that would relate to shadow work? Because essentially what that is you're basically turning around and you're facing the stuff within yourself that you don't want to face because you've been running away from it your whole life, whether it's abandonment, whether it's, you know, your vulnerability or whatever. So how would you guide someone through the process of facing the things within themselves that they don't want to face, but realize they have to face if they want to grow?
And this is the thing, most people, like for you just saying that about abandonment, about your dad there, it's kind of like as we grow, that was just our life. So how do we know that we're carrying an abandonment until we play something out enough times to cause us enough heartache where we go, okay, and all of a sudden one day the penny drops, oh my God, that's abandonment. But there's all this history between just you being this boy to then you playing out this patterning before you recognize that, oh, I recognize that now as a grown man who's gone through blah, 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 blah. Like you say, affected relationships, he's done all this. Mm. And we've created drama around it. We don't even have any idea. There's nobody grabs you and goes, oh, look, and there's your school bag, darling, and there's your lunchbox, and there's a box for abandonment for you, just so you know what you're dealing with. Like, nobody is giving you your emotions and telling you what you're dealing with. Like, it's our responsibility to find out what our stuff is. And everybody has it. Yes. And everybody, we can say, you know, I mean, I know people who are in their 60s who are still pointing fingers at the people who did it.
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Instead of going, oh, no, like you just did it beautifully before. This is what happened to me and it left me with this. And so I've had to deal with that, right? Because you identified it and then you put in play what you need to do to become your best human. And that's the best you can do. You take responsibility for whatever it is that you've been given. You could go through resentment, anger, fury, whatever it is about the person, but you don't get to just keep doing it and affecting other people and ruining your own life unless, you know, that's what you want for yourself.
It's crazy. Like, because for me, kind of, I'm 36 now. So when I kind of hit 30, I just decided, you know what, I'm sick of carrying this, you know, resentment towards him. So I ended up getting in contact with him and essentially forgiving him. You know, and that was a great weight off me because I was finally letting go of energy that I just didn't need to hang on to anymore. And yeah, but it's crazy. Like, I mean, it's like, I think the most powerful asset one can have in life is the ability to essentially reframe all the shit that they've been through in a way that empowers them. So for example, me, you know, looking back on my abandonment issues and the drama, as you said, that I would have gone through in relationships, it's like, I look back at all that now and I look back at the, you know, my dad leaving me and I look back at it all as a blessing because at the end of the day, it's facilitated me to grow into the person that I am now. And I'm not saying that I've evolved fully and completely into the person, you know, into the best version of myself. But, you know, having the ability to reframe the crap that you've been through in your life, I just think is such an asset. Because then instead of cultivating resentment and cultivating bitterness, you're cultivating gratitude. You know, you're cultivating appreciation within yourself for yourself because of the fact that you were able to deal with all that shit. You know, I mean, think about it that way, you know, I mean, the fact that you've been able to come through all that stuff that you've been through and emerge as the person that you are now, being compassionate, being loving, being willing, you know, to still be vulnerable with people and still be expressive. I mean, I just think that's such a beautiful way to kind of look at your struggles and look at yourself too. So yeah, I don't know why I felt the need to go and do a big ramble about that. It's important.
You know what's interesting as well is a thing I write about a lot is the reflection piece is fabulous because everything is a gift at the end.
Yes.
At the end. Also. But shadow work is during. Shadow work is what it really looks and feels like in the pits of despair. It's before we've got to the gratitude. It's before we've got to the reflective stage. Shadow work is like, okay, I'm going in. Yeah. And you're generally in pain. It's generally the dark night of the soul. You know, it's the referred to as the, you know, the moment that broke me, or it was the changing point of my life. So shadow work for me is about, we get to that point where we have been through enough pain that we start taking responsibility. And then when we start taking responsibility, the next step is to go into that pain. And that means we have to not just, so if I think, you know, if we think of our stomach, the base, like, I don't know whether you do know chakra work, but
yeah,
you know,
your navel, your navel.
All the way through. So if you think that the base chakra, you've got a spring, and throughout your life, you just kind of throwing all of your experiences onto this spring. And when you're a kid, the big thing that happened was a rock. And so your spring kind of goes boom, straight away. And then from the rock, then there's just a shitload of pebbles. And they go on top of the rock and they go on top of the rock. And there's all these pebbles. And they're the experiences that the rock creates almost. And wow. So we're constantly putting it on top and on top and on top until it's just too heavy to carry around anymore. And there's not enough room for any more pebbles, any more rocks. It's too hard, right? The backpack needs to be dropped. You know, the spring needs to spring to give you life, to bring you, it's the spring of your life, right? So we get to a point where we have to start removing the pebbles. And so that's the digging process. That's kind of like, I'm going to go in and I'm going to have a look at what this is all about. But for each pebble, there could be a shame or a guilt because it's a behavior you've done when you've not been your best self. You've not been in control because you've been under trigger. So you're looking at each pebble as it's coming up and going, oh my God. So before you even know what you're dealing with, you're already in a world of pain. You're going, oh my God, I can't believe that I did this. And it's almost like you're apologizing for all of these things that you've put yourself through before you even get to where you're going. You know, you're not even close to the initial problem yet. But the bravery and the courage that you're there, you know. And so for me, when somebody starts the digging process, when somebody says, I want to go in, when they hire me, for example, because they've had enough, they want to go in, they want to make a change. That's the point. They hire somebody to help them, be a psychologist, a therapist, me, you know, they go to a men's group. A woman goes to a divine feminine circle to speak openly, whatever that healing process looks like for you. That's the courage right there, the moment of courage, where it needs to be rewarded, it needs to be held with grace, it needs to be shown dignity, it needs to be held with compassion. As we then hold somebody through the process of looking at what they've, you know, in inverted commas, done wrong, you know, but really we're only ever doing the very best that we could with how our spring was functioning at the time, right? So as we remove these pebbles, it's important to say, yeah, look at that and toss it. Yeah, and look at that and toss it. And this process, it's not a process that's done in a week. It's not done in a fortnight. You know, people go, oh, you're feeling a bit depressed. And then the following week, like, oh, you're still depressed. And then within a month, they don't want you in their life anymore because you're a downer. You know, well, fuck off. You know, that's what this looks like, right? You know, that's what this looks like. And don't tell me that I'm not doing it right. Don't give me some quote about that I'm not listening to my lessons, or that, you know, everything's sent to triers, or any of these flippant comments and the spiritual bypass of somebody really in pain. It's when we go to somebody and say, I can sit with you in this dark place for as long as it takes you to get to where you need to be, because I admire what you're doing here. Instead of people who are holding this fake smile, putting it on Facebook that they are, you know, hashtag family life, you know, and they're just going around their world, and they might be being mean to somebody. They might, you know, men might be being mean to their partner. Women might be being mean to their husbands. They could be shouting at their kids, bitching about friends, just not behaving well because they don't want to look at themselves.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely, 100%. And that's the thing. If people are making such an effort to save face with regards to the image that they're projecting out into the world, most of the time they're hiding something anyway. You know? Say again, sorry.
Totally. You can't always show up behaving well. You know, you can't. Because otherwise you're not pushing your boundaries. You're constantly in a safe zone of what you know you can cope with. The only way we'll get to be better is to push our boundaries, to ask ourselves to be better. And that's generally after we recognize something within us where we didn't behave well.
Yeah. So I'd like to kind of go back to a time in your life when you were kind of vulnerable. I know that you did suffer with depression. As I have as well, I suffer with depression in my teens. But I'd like to kind of go into your kind of transformation with regards to what kind of enlightened you to kind of, you know, step out of that depression into, you know, the courageous and strong individual that you are today.
I think I'm still in it, you know. I'm 47 now. I started reading about personal development when I was 20. And that's 27 years ago. And that was early 90s. And it was this tiny little, like, three books of Louise Hay in the back of a bookstore underneath a dim light. And all the weirdos were hanging out there. And I just started reading. I knew I was really unwell, and I knew I wasn't going to cope or do any better by seeing doctors and by being medicated, right? So I just knew that this was my path. And I started uncovering. One of the big things that happened really quickly was that I realized my birth personality versus my social personality. And what I mean by that was the person I'd become with the rules in the town and the home and the environment that I'd been brought up in was how I lived. But I was in constant disagreement with myself all the time without knowing. I just was constantly, you know, push pull.
That's amazing that you say that, because I've just had about 20 memories of just flashback into my mind of actually doing that. That's what it felt like, wasn't it? It felt like a push pull. It was like you're struggling against yourself.
Yeah. And so then I realized, I started looking at all these things about what I really thought and really felt. And yet I was writing down what I thought I should say, right? And so I noticed, oh my God, like the differences through what I was writing versus what was in my heart were two completely different things. And I had this massive drop in at the age of 21. The person I was born to be is not the environment I've been in. And I'm not a normal person from my environment. I know that sounds weird, but
it doesn't sound weird at all. Not to me. You know, what is normal?
Yeah. You know what I mean? I just thought so differently, and and my brain and my emotions and yeah, I didn't ever meet anybody like me. So I became everybody. Yes. And in that, I was nobody.
Yes.
So I had to meet myself in my early 20s. I had to re-meet myself. And I had to almost invite myself in as a guest. Oh, there you are. What do you think about this? What do you think about that? Oh my God, is that what you think? So you don't think this then? And then I had to really sit with every decision I made and went, who's making this decision? Me or the person that I've become? And I started getting really clever at doing that. And the more decisions I made based around my heart and who I really was versus who I thought I should be, the better I felt. And that took a long time. Like, that took years.
It's so funny that you say that, because I was exactly the same, you know. I was the black sheep of everyone, you know. But the crazy thing is, now I look back and I go, do you know what? That was probably the best thing that ever happened to me, you know. Yeah. Like, you know, because at the end of the day, yeah, exactly. And at the end of the day, I just believe now that your own individual energetic signature is your number one asset in the world. It is your energy. It is your own uniqueness that is your number one asset in the world. And yeah, when I think back to those times now, all the times I was rejected by people, or, you know, let down or disappointed or betrayed or whatever, and I just go, you know what? It was all working in my favor. You know, it was all working in my favor. And that goes back to what I was talking about before, about reframing the shit that you've been through and essentially turning it into gold. You know, because you can do that with the power of your own perception, you know. So yeah, that's fascinating that you've basically been through the same thing. Yeah.
It's amazing, because as we go through as well, we face different challenges and different challenges and different challenges. And you think, I've been here, I've done this. Well, you haven't done enough. Darling, you're not even close to the bottom. And I realize I'm still on the pebbles, right? And then every now and again, I go, that was a rock. So, like, I often think, wow, so, you know, that actually, that's not the end. And so the uncovering each time is different, and the depth is different. And that is the pleasure and the pain of growth. We can't have one without the other, really.
Exactly.
Because one pushes us to do the deeper dig.
Yes, it's the pain that we've been through pushes us to become a better person. Mm. If you stop that growth, you stagnate, you know, and life becomes monotonous and boring and, you know, stuff like that. So yeah, I mean, it's so funny that you say that, Helen, because I've actually been thinking about that for the past couple of weeks. I've been like, you know, all the pain is necessary because A, it's contrast, but B, it pushes you forward to improve.
Mm. Yeah, and it makes us, it knocks us out of autopilot as well, you know. And I believe personally, I can't do what I'm here to do unless I find out who I truly am in order to do the work. So it's a constant state of becoming the person you're supposed to be to do what you're here to do.
Yes.
And all of the learnings, like I said, on reflection, when we can go, oh yes, I can be very self-righteous about my own growth now. I'm so knowledgeable. You're some like shaking, nervous wreck of, like, you know, snot and tears and anxiety. But on reflection, we're all very lovely. And but yeah, all of that, it's you realize that, oh, that's brought me to this, and I would not have been here had I not done that. And this is awesome. Now I have the tools to deal with this because I had that. And it's this beautiful jigsaw puzzle of life. And the thing that does happen, I think, sometimes when you're doing deep shadow work is then coming out and trusting joy and knowing that this is a space to relax into, to be back in joy, to be trusting of that, and to reconnect with the love of living and all of that. So there's this really this constant balance, isn't it? Like we were saying, masculine, feminine, the joy and the depth and the shadow and the light. It's about mixing them up to get this beautiful balance of the very best and the most richest experience that we can have. And we do need that. And I call that the baby bear's chair. I always refer to that with everything.
Like baby bear's chair. Explain that.
Well, I look at any argument in the world and I'm like, there's the extreme and then there's the other extreme. But in the middle, there's a beautiful balance. And I call that the baby bear's chair because the baby bear's chair was just right. So she sat on the soft chair, but then she sat on the baby bear's chair.
Oh, I get it. Goldilocks.
So it's kind of like, you know, like I don't want to be on the hard seat. I don't want to be on the soft seat. I just want to be on the one that feels comfortable. And for everybody, that baby bear's chair, it could be the daddy's chair, it could be the mommy's chair, or it could be the baby bear's chair. Which chair is your chair? You know, so we have to allow people to pick their chair and then we pick our chair, you know. So, but everybody has their chair, but there's the balance, you know, there has to be that balance where you lay in the bed and you find the bed that's most comfortable for you. So when I look at any argument, like, you know, the Me Too movement, absolutely appalling what's been going on with women being attacked and abused.
Yes,
and
absolutely.
Everything else, the misogyny, it's disgusting.
It's stressful. Yeah.
But then the, you know, stabbing men's eulogies and, you know, doing the whole kind of like, all men are bad, all men are rapists, blah, 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 blah. All white men are the torturers of the world. That's like, you know.
It's generalization. Any generalization is distorted because at the end of the day.
That's the soft chair. That's the hard chair. And like, if we just get the baby bear's chair in the middle and we can, you know, kind of create this balance. So that's why I always refer back to, well, what's the baby bear's chair in this? Can we, you know, take it to the extremes?
So it's essentially looking at things objectively in a sense and realizing that there are, you know, two polarized opposites essentially that people tend to view things from. And if you have the ability to observe those, you know, in their entirety and keep yourself centered in the middle essentially, that's how you kind of evolve. This is something that I was fascinated about. You told me about this recently. You did a talk on what happens if we never get our shit together. It was a talk on authenticity. So can you tell me about that?
Well, I think it was one of the pebble drawing times, the pebble pulling. And I'd been going through a really, really horrible divorce. And I was going through lots of difficulties that were ongoing. And I found that I couldn't voice to anybody how I really felt. And I felt that in society as a whole, everywhere I looked, people were saying, don't be negative, negative vibes, positive vibes only, you know, like, oh, you know, if friendships are draining, then get out of the friendship, like, you know, positive vibes, positive vibes. Mm-hmm. And it was all very, let's only talk about the stuff that's really nice to hear. And when anybody was saying anything that was difficult, traumatic, or people were being shut down with spiritual bullshit, really, and bypassing of their emotion. And I was really, really annoyed. I could see it happening everywhere. And I was like, hang on a minute. This is not just a lesson for me. This is real. It's difficult. I don't care if it's a lesson. These emotions are real and valid. And I need to be able to express them without being...
ostracized.
Yeah, and without being shamed, you know? Like I wasn't coping, or that I was negative, or that I couldn't have friendships because I was a downer, you know? Like, and I became... And all the books I was reading at the time as well were very, it's all an illusion and all of that. And whereas I get that, there is a great deal of that. But sometimes we are in situations that are, I was going through things that were happening to my children that I could not control. And it was very, very hard to manage emotionally. And within that, sure, reflection again, all beautiful, all good, amazing experience. Mm. But during the time.
Not while you're going through it.
I was terrified yeah. what was happening. And I had no idea of the effect. And I couldn't stop it. And I felt helpless and like I was speaking bubbles underwater. It was awful. And on Facebook, it was the same. And then I just thought, and when I went to women's groups and spoke to women, I was hearing all these stories of distress and anxiety and people not coping who didn't say it. So I just put up online. I decided I'd sell tickets, $45 a ticket, to come to an event where I stood on stage for an hour and talked about what happens if you never get your shit together. What happens if this is what it looks like? What happens if we don't have our shit together? What happens if we all say none of us have got our shit together, which kind of means we all have our shit together? What about if I can give you permission to say, yeah, I had a shit day, and not tell you you're being negative? How freeing would that be? And then we can just let that day go and you can start tomorrow without it. Instead of taking the next day into the next day, the previous day into the next day, because you haven't been able to voice it. You haven't been able to release it or
exactly.
own it or validate
it. That's the word. And that's what I just wanted to say is that, you know, it's not about denying the negative kind of side of it. It's not about saying it doesn't exist, but it's about going into it and experiencing it and embracing it as something that you need to release and let go of. And it's not about wallowing in self-pity and right. wallowing in depression. I think a lot of times people get that confused. You know, at the end of the day, there is a positivity bias kind of polarization essentially in spirituality. But like, I would be one of those people. I'm very, very, you know, I think it's very important to have a positive bias mindset. But at the same time, I also think it's very, very important to be able to go back and release all the shit that you've been through in your life and face the darkness and face the fears and face the pain and face the traumas and experience them and release them essentially. Because it's energy you're holding onto in your energetic field, you know, it's energy. And if you just brush it under the table and just pretend it never happened, it's going to manifest in some way. You know, so it is important to kind of be able to face that. And I just love that. I love that. So you essentially, like, I'd say, how many people came to that talk? You must have had a ton of people.
I did it five times. Yeah. I mean, if you look at the way this conversation started as tonight, we were talking about how I'd started this podcast to open the floor for men to talk about vulnerability and all of the inner thoughts and feelings and to hold the space for that. And then we're talking now about the fact that there's the positivity where we don't want to hear any of that. And so this is what I'm talking about, how confusing our environment is. We're going, come here, come here, come here, go away, go away, go away. We want vulnerability, but don't be weak. Oh, we want you to tell me your feelings and whether you're feeling really sad, and we want to connect with you emotionally. Yeah. But that's like negative, man. Like, come
yeah.
on.
Wow.
You know, like, that's what I'm saying. It's the baby bear's chair. We're not talking about pessimism, right? Where somebody's gone, oh yeah, I lost my wallet, my boyfriend's an arsehole.
Yeah. A victim.
Arsehole he was 2.5 years ago when I was still with the same guy.
Oh God, I can't stand that.
Right? That's a completely different conversation.
Yeah.
We're talking about people, we're saying to people, we've got a national mental health problem here. And we're saying to people, tell me before you kill yourself, right? Tell me, come and speak to me. Tell me how you're feeling. Open, cry. You're allowed to cry. You're allowed to tell me how bad you feel. You're allowed to be this person. Be vulnerable, be authentic, blah, 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 blah. And this is what I mean. We're banging on all the time, but we don't see it through. And then at the next minute, we're sending people memes. You know, you'll make it, good for you. What doesn't kill you makes you stronger. Or, you know, oh yeah, they've been a real downer. Like, no.
So how do we define the difference then? Because I know exactly what you're saying. And I'm just trying to think of the language, like, because, okay, so you've got certain people who are, let's say, poor me's, right? And they're victims and they blame everything in society for the way things are. They blame their, you know what I mean? They don't take any personal responsibility for the stuff that they've been through. They place the blame on everything external outside themselves. And they're exactly the type of person you were talking to who's like, oh, my boyfriend this and blah, 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 right? But what then is the other term then that we define that from victimhood? Because we're talking here about genuine emotional expression of pain that people have been through. So how do we define one from the other?
Very easy. Very easy. The people who are in pain are the people who are facing it. The people who are in pain are facing it. The people who are whining are doing nothing about anything. They're just loving being in it. On some level, it works for them. It gets them the attention they need. It means they don't have to do the job that they didn't do because they can say, so-and-so won't let me do it, or he stopped me, or blah, blah, blah. You just hear that. You just nod and let them go on their way, right?
Yeah.
That's pessimism. That's somebody who's, they're on their own little path. They're doing their thing. But I'm talking about, and those people who are just complaining about their wife or their girlfriend or their husband or their partner, whatever, they're never going to come to you with true vulnerability. They're never going to come to you with that. So it's an easy distinction. When somebody speaks to you about their feelings, then we hold space for that. When somebody moans about their life, you've got every right to go, mate, we had this conversation 2.5 years ago, dump your boyfriend. It's a very different conversation to somebody coming to you saying, I am afraid because I am so worried. This is happening to me and I don't know how to handle it. It's real. I'm just
They're actually kind of asking questions based on the desire to improve the situation as opposed to somebody who's just complaining.
Somebody's coming to you with life problems or somebody's coming to you with their emotions.
Wow.
So when somebody's coming to you with their emotion of like, oh my God, I went through this today and it was really, really hard. And I'm going through this at the moment and I just don't know how I'm going to deal with this. I just feel so devastated. Versus somebody coming to you going, oh my God, like I was on the way here. This guy, like, it just cut me off in traffic. Can you see the difference?
Yeah, I do. I see the difference completely. Yeah.
Huge.
Yeah,
and yet we treat both of them the same way because it's easier to just blank out somebody's depth. It's a walkout card for people who don't want to deal. It's like grief, you know, somebody's dealing with grief and people go, well, I didn't want to call them because what do you say, you know? So there's this person in grief dealing with incredible pain. They're a widow, you know, and they've got young children and they are isolated because the people who have husbands don't want to go and see them because they feel guilty for having a husband. So it's uncomfortable. So that rather than facing their own uncomfortableness, the person who is grieving is isolated, right? So, and that is a common thing. We don't deal with uncomfortable situations. And so people who are depressed and people who are really struggling can feel and sense and see the uncomfortableness from other people not knowing what to do with them. So they just don't do it. And we're saying, do it, do it, do it. But when they do, our uncomfortableness means that we're flippant or we're dismissive or we deem it negative. It's not on. As a society, we can't say one thing and behave in a completely different manner. We have two constant opposing narratives. And it's so confusing how to show up for everybody in this space. Make no mistake, when somebody comes to you with their emotion, whether you deem it negative or not, it is courageous. And it needs appreciation, compassion, time, care, and assistance. And you need to get out of your own box or uncomfortableness and appreciate the strength of the person you've got in front of you. And what people don't say to people is, what can I do for you? Instead of going, well, I know when I felt like that, me, look at how good I was at dealing with my shit. I'm going to give you a big lecture about how fabulous I am. And the person sits there going, okay, I've just been completely dismissed and unheard. I'm still walking away now feeling worse than I did in the first place. But thanks for your knowledge, you know.
Yeah.
What can I do for you? Is there anything that you feel you can do for you? So we're saying to them, do you want my advice? Or do you know what to do? Or are you asking for my advice? What can I do to support you? Instead of launching into egotistical responses based around your own learning, you know?
So okay, so I understand exactly what you're saying. And it's such a unique, amazing perspective. Like, I've never heard anyone express, you know, in this way before. So if you were trying to coach someone to essentially, you know, do what you do, that person would need to essentially adopt, you know, your philosophies on it. So how would you get someone to do that if you were to coach them to do what you do?
So I'd say when you sit in anybody's presence and you ask them a question, don't start planning your return while they're still talking. You know, don't start plotting what you're going to say.
Yeah.
So many people listen to respond.
Yes.
Instead of listening. Don't think about how clever your reply is going to be. Don't think about how impressive you can be towards that person. Don't think about yourself at all. Think about what they're saying and the enormity that it holds for them. It's not about you. It's not about what you know. It's not about your value. It's about them. So at that point, as a person, we're removed. We become a vessel for them to sit with. And in that, all of what we are carrying can fall away. And we hold the space. And that's true space holding. Then people talk to us about whatever it is, and you can see. You might just put your hand on their knee. You might just intently look at them and nod. And then when there's a pause, don't talk. Because that's still them processing what might come next. Because they're starting to feel safer and safer. So don't talk yet. Just go, yeah, I get that. Agree, validate, identify, love, care. Pour the energy of love into that space. That's all you need to offer. No words, no advice. And then you'll see whether they look at you to say, I'm done talking. And it's obvious. Or it doesn't feel like silence to them because they're in their own track of their mind because they've been given this beautiful space now. And they start to pour more and more. And then as you get to a point where you think, okay, is there anything I can do for you? How can I support you? And then they go, I don't know. Just doing this. Just do this, you know? And that is often all they need. And you go, you know, you're allowed to feel like this. It's okay. I totally get that this would be so hard for you. This is really shitty. You know, don't tell them that, you know, they're going to get better from it or that there's this or because in that moment, it's dismissive. And it's heartbreaking. It just makes them go, you know, yep, okay. I'm going to be better from it. I'll just stop talking. Because they feel silly. So if the other approach is to say, do you have a feeling about what you'd like to do? Maybe they have the knowledge within them. And so you asking, because we all carry the answers.
Yes.
So we're saying, you know, what do you think you should do? And if they say, I don't know, what do you think? When they say, what do you think? Then you have a right to give advice because they've asked you. until then, you're in your own ego, you know? And so it's a loving space. It's a loving space of saying, this is not about me. This is all for you. And I love and care about you. And what you are saying is totally relevant and right for you in this moment. And I validate it. Because this experience is yours. I can't possibly know what you're feeling like. Even if I've been through the same thing, it will have had a different color to me. You know, if they struggle for like, I don't even know how to explain it. Is there a color? What color is it? You know, like this is for younger kids maybe, or people who are really struggling, never shared feelings before, they go, I don't know, it's just black, you know? So you kind of give them tools to work with to really, and then at the end they go, oh God. And they feel so much better. You know, it's this release, it's this validation, it's the clarification that they're okay. They can be this person, that they're loved, that they're still valid and whole and important. And on no level do you think any less of them. And at no point have you given advice that shamed them, made them feel like they're not coping, that they're not doing it right, you know? And we, you know, in this, and this is almost like the sad spiritual ego, that there's so much self-help now and there's so many breakthroughs that we're all a Buddha, you know? We're all a guru and we've all got knowledge to share. But the greatest knowledge is that you know nothing at all. And you certainly don't know nothing about their experience because it's not yours. And I tell you something that happened to me, Nigel, when I was a young mom. Well, I wasn't that young, but my kids were young. And I was about 30. And my son was 3 or something. And I was having a hard time. And I went to a counselor, psychologist, psychotherapist, can't even remember who he was. But, and I remember feeling like I was dealing with it as a great parent. Like I'd read some self-help books and I wanted to impress this psychologist. I wanted him to think she's a great mom. So I might've been there because I was a bit messed up, but at least you can know that I'm a really great mom because my ego needs you to be thinking that I'm amazing because I'm being vulnerable. So I'll share this with you, but then I'll make you impressed by me. There's this push-pull of when we're doing this sharing. So I told him about this instance that had happened with my son and what I did about it as this great mom, you know. And I knew in this moment that he needed this. And so I blah, blah, blah. And he went, right. So you gave him what you needed as a child. And I went, excuse me.
Wow.
If you gave him what you wanted when you were young that you didn't get in that moment. And I looked at him and I swear to God, I was horrified. Because this was an impressive story. Like, what are you even talking about? And what he did was he went, this is not about you. It was his. Did you ask him how that experience felt for him? And I just was like, wow. And I hadn't. And it changed the way I parented from that day, about taking my own wounding, my own things that I thought I'd missed out of my parenting and asking my child what was the experience that they had, what did they need, you know? And obviously, as a parent as well, you weigh up when they're too young to know what they need. You obviously just give them what you've got. But yeah, interesting.
Wow. That's amazing. You certainly weren't expecting that when you walked in the door that day, were you?
Excuse me, I'm just so impressive.
Yeah.
Not.
That's so funny. So I mean, yeah, it could really go on forever. I mean, it's just something that nobody talks about, or, you know, people just don't talk about this type of stuff, you know, and I just think it's fantastic the way that you're kind of bringing this into the light, you know, and creating kind of awareness around it, you know, but, yeah, so I sent you a questionnaire before the interview, and I asked you to, describe the message you'd like to get across to inspire listeners in one sentence. And you said, in the dark, when there's no one around, the story you created fades as you sit knowing what role you played, what the truth really is. Can you sit with that person? Do the work until you can. And that sums up exactly what you were saying before, essentially about holding space. Like, I've heard about this term holding space, you know, and I just thought it was kind of, you know, just kind of been there for someone. But the way that you've described it, you know, in the last kind of 20 minutes or so, just has given me so many kind of realizations with regards to the level of compassion that is required in order for us to do that. And the level of conscious awareness of our own ego patterns as well. Because essentially what it is you're holding the moment without your ego. Essentially, you are literally dissolving your own identity of self, your own identity of preference, and your own identity of your need to express your wisdom. And you're literally just letting that person express. On an energetic level, you're essentially, yeah, I mean, you're just kind of embracing them, really. And I just think it's so powerful. I mean, you must have people. I mean, have you ever had anyone that kind of just kind of breaks down after allowing them to kind of express that way? Or what kind of reactions do you usually get? Do people just kind of sigh and go, oh, thank you for listening?
Or generally, by the end of the conversation, people who've rang or come to me really distressed, either crying, sobbing, not knowing how they're going to get through, really feeling like this is the end, this is as much as I can take. Within an hour of really being with them, and the other really, really important piece is there's no judgment. You don't get to tell them whether it's right, wrong, or indifferent. And inside yourself, you don't judge it either. There's not a moment where you can click your brain in and go, really? Oh my God. You know, because that's energetically,
yeah,
it ruins it.
Yeah.
So it's a complete no judgment space as well. And so within that space, they say the things that is the unspeakable. They'll say things that they just feel so ashamed of thinking. And then by the end of the conversation, they're generally going, oh my God, I don't even feel like that now. I can't believe I said that. You know, that's not what I really think. And I go, I know that. I totally know that that's not what you really think, but I get that you felt it because this is real, right? We think things that aren't nice. We don't act on them. We think things that aren't appropriate, but we don't act on them, you know, and we're shamed.
Yeah. You
know? And so guilt is a personal construct. So guilt is our own. We make ourselves feel guilty, which is the piece that I was saying about the middle of the night, right? We wake up with this guilt or whatever. Shame is a social construct. So shame is offered by society. So we are shamed by a group or by society, and we feel that shame. But if we don't allow anybody else's judgment of us to bother us, we're never ashamed. We're like, well, I went into that room and I did that. I don't feel ashamed about it. I think I was justified. We don't accept the shame. So we don't feel shamed because we don't accept the social judgment. But if we're open to social judgment, oh my God, what did they think of me? I'm so ashamed. Oh my God, I'm so ashamed. But guilt is completely different. Guilt's personal. It's carried within. It's not offered from anybody else. So the difference between that is really important as well in healing. So when I hold a space for somebody, they are not shamed by me. They can actually release their own guilt. So that's a powerful interchange.
It's so amazing. I'm just trying to think about what would be occurring on an energetic level in a room where you and the other person would be, you know, essentially doing this. And it's like you're nearly transcending yourself. I mean, it's, you know, to kind of allow, I'm so fascinated with it because I want to be able to do this for people myself. And I do know that I have struggled with that, because usually I'm the type of person who's always looking for solutions. You know, I've always got answers to things, and, you know, if someone comes to me, I'll usually give them a strategy. But you see, I think the difference is it depends on the level of healing that you're willing to offer to a client. I mean, you've said that you've had people coming to you essentially crying and nearly kind of at their wit's end. So the fact that you're open to allowing people, you know, in those kind of places to come to you and heal those people is something that's very kind of, you know, evolved, you know, emotionally mature, you know, from my perspective, you know, perceiving that you have the, you know, the patience and acceptance to do that. And I think, I just think as far as coaching goes, this is something that is just so valuable. You know, because so many times, as you said, shame, I mean, society, you know, makes you feel ashamed for feeling crap about yourself. I mean, shame can also go back to, you know, when you were a kid and when you used to get ridiculed or whatever for doing something stupid in the playground or whatever it might be. So we have so much of that kind of energetic conditioning that we hold on to. And to be able to just allow someone to express thoughts that they would never have wanted to share with anyone, that they might have been holding on for years and they feel ashamed of having ever thought those thoughts. And then for you to allow them to actually speak those thoughts. And then at the end go, I don't even think that, you know? Yeah. And it's like, I'm just trying to think of it from an energetic standpoint. So it's essentially energy that's just not really in, you know, it's not in harmony with who they are, but yet they're holding onto it for some reason. They can't let go of the energy. They can't express it because of shame of having that energy in the first place. Do you know what I mean? So yeah, you've just really opened my eyes to so many things with regards to, you know, being there for a person and, you know, who needs it. And again, it's holding space.
You know, that's the transformational space. That's where we're not just like, you know, if somebody came to me and went, oh my God, I'm doing this business and I'm really struggling with this. It's an advice piece and it's a motivation and it's like, oh my God, blah, blah, blah. Like you do that for me, right?
Yeah.
And I come to you to go, just tell me something great so that I can keep going, motivate me. And you're so brilliant.
Yeah.
And,
thank you.
And so, yeah. And so there's that side as well, which is that brilliance within that side of it. So, yeah. In this transformational space of shadow work, that's
yeah. So they're different. Yeah. I get you. So they're different levels of.
Yeah, it is depending on where we're at. Like, there's no way that I would constantly do that level of holding for a client.
Exactly. You
know, yeah. Kind of like these are the breakthrough transformational moments. Mm. And then they have the, like, you know, after 2 days later, they're walking on air because, you know, it's gone. Whereas if you couldn't hold that space for them, you gave them the advice in the moment, they went off, they'd still be carrying it a week later. And they'd be also feeling like they've got nowhere to go with it because they thought they could trust you and they can't even tell you. So now who are they going to tell? So, you know, you have the opportunity to stop it. And then 2 days later, they're lighter than air, and then they'll ring you and go, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, good for you. And there's the motivational piece. Yeah, do that. You know you can do that, blah, blah, blah. Absolutely, get stuck in, you know.
Yeah.
So it's kind of, it's the light and the shadow and the light and the shadow. And
this is essentially the definition of shadow work. And now I understand. Now I understand what you mean. So yeah, and it's so crazy because I saw, funny enough, a Facebook quote. I have loads of them that come up on my feed. But it was Carl Jung, and he said to become, or it's, I'm paraphrasing, but he said something about becoming enlightened is not about picturing, you know, angelic beings. It's about bringing the darkness to the light, and that's what you do.
Yes,
that's what you do. You bring the darkness to the light, and that is something that I've realized now that, I mean, yeah, as you said, and I appreciate what you said, you know, about me building people up. That's what I do, essentially. I build people up. I get them excited. I get them passionate. I help them have breakthroughs if they're on that certain level. But as far as what you're doing is you're healing people who are kind of at their wit's end. You're healing people who are just, they just don't know what the hell to do anymore.
Don't know they're at their wit's end. When I start working with people who are drinking too much, they just know they're not doing so well and they want to change their life. But they need to go to these levels to change their life to this degree to say, okay, well, you know, blah, blah, blah. We're going to talk about this. And have you thought about that? And they fight it. Well, I don't want to do that. And that's just blah, blah, and whatever. Mm. Or, you know, I don't know why I do this every time. I don't know why I constantly destroy this part of myself. Or I don't know why I can't. And that's when you start the dig and you start removing the pebbles. And, you know, and so then one day they wake up and they go, I'm in the depths of despair today. Because as they're processing and moving through, they hit emotions and then, boom, then they get triggered with a biggie. And that's where then, like, here we are. Let's shine a light on this shadow. This is big stuff. And this is really brave. This is really courageous. This is what we're doing here. And that's the transformational space. People who I know and who I've worked with will come to me in that space. But a lot of people, when they start coming to me, they don't know what they're going to uncover. And some people don't need to go that deep. But not all shadows are bone rattling as well. Some shadows are just blocks, but they still need that total space holding where there's no interruptions as they work through until they go, oh my God. You know, and they have been given enough space to just go, so it's been me all along then.
It's always us. That's the conundrum. So tell me a little bit then about the Gentleman's Club. I know kind of the concept behind that is to empower men, you know, who kind of have, you know, I suppose been divorced or whatever, and empowering them to kind of open up to new possibilities with regards to, you know, the levels of happiness they can experience in their lives. So can you go into just a little bit about that and explain the concept?
It's the Gentleman's Secret.
Oh, and the secret.
What it means is,
whoops.
You know, this age gap between 45, 55, there's a lot of change, especially in our environment now. There's a lot of divorces, separations, or guys who've never been married going, what the hell am I doing with my life? There's an age there where it's the midlife crisis, right? And so often men who've been really successful are quite disenfranchised from their families in their 40s because they're going through change, but they've been working all the time. They don't necessarily have a great relationship with their wife. They're going through a divorce or whatever. So they're kind of a bit disconnected from their kids. They kind of believe that, oh, well, I've been doing this work. I've been providing for the family. What more do you want? I've been doing everything a man's supposed to do. I've got all the bells and whistles. And here I am in this kind of holding cell that feels like crap, that's not had any kind of home or comfort. They're not cooking for themselves. They've got, they're starting to eat rubbish. They're drinking too much. They're feeling lonely. They don't have any connected friendships. And there's this desperate feel of loneliness. And so what was fulfilling them before, they've seen the emptiness in it. And so for me, it's about them going in at that stage and going, well, what does your life look like? And let's unpack that. Let's unpack, you know, how you feel about what you're doing, why you've done it, what's your reasoning behind it, and honoring where they've been to get them to where they are. Because I can guarantee that they've worked hard and think that they've been doing the right thing. And so, okay, what happened with this? Well, can you understand that you would do this? And maybe that wasn't appropriate. Can you understand this? And start shining kind of like, just, you know, bits of kind of knowing and learning on how things are at the moment. And then deepening as your relationship deepens to kind of go, this is what's possible for you though. And so then you're opening up new ways of being, new ways of thinking, new ways of connecting, starting to really look at the heart space. How closed is it? You know, why is it closed? We're going to go into your wardrobe. We're going to make you feel good about yourself. We're going to look at your nutrition. What are you putting in your body? It's affecting your brain. Like, come on, let's create an echo chamber around you that makes you feel like you're worth everything. You're $1 million just as a human being without anything else. Let's do your apartment. Let's not make it a bloody holding cell where you sit and drink. Let's create something that you want to come home to, that this is now your home. You're not going back where you were to the family home. This is now the home that you're creating for your children to come and visit, for you to invite a really lovely lady to come and be with you here. You're creating a new life from this space. You know, don't punish yourself by being in a place that doesn't feel nice, right? A lot of guys don't know how to do that. So, and I'm an interior designer. So I've done interior design for years, and I'm a trained personal stylist and blah, blah, blah. So I come with kind of the...
You got the whole package.
The toolbox. we keep creating to until they feel like at home and comfortable and like there's other options, you know? Mm.
So it's essentially a lifestyle / environmental transformation process then, essentially, wouldn't it be?
Yeah, yeah. It's kind of like a more intense version of Queer Eye for the Straight Guy, but it's just me.
You're a force of nature. Don't say just me.
It's almost like we're more than just what they look like. It's more about what their insides look like.
Yeah.
And that heart-brain connection.
And it's kind of getting a coherence with regards to their, it's kind of doing the work on the inside, bringing them up on the inside, and then kind of having coherence in their environment to kind of cultivate that, you know, that realization within themselves, but that they can be happier, you know, they don't have to be miserable and lonely and, you know, drinking every night, as you say.
That kind of dick brain connection.
Get rid of it.
We go from heart brain connection.
Oh, that's so hilarious.
Instead of being in that kind of like, you know, that dick masculine, I call it, more into the heart centered masculine. where we can be totally masculine and strong, but coming from that heart space means it's so much more approachable, so much more loving. And so it invites more love in, it invites more experiences in. It just invites life, right? Rather than going to the world pointing at it with your dick. It's all external, right? When you know.
And it kind of goes back to the ego kind of spiritual thing as well. This is kind of cultivating a more spiritual side of it as opposed to the ego side of it. It's fascinating. It's such a unique thing. I mean, I think that's definitely something that's going to take off in a big way, because there are so many, you know, as you said, middle-aged men out there, divorced, who are lonely and who are just kind of, you know, workaholics in a sense, and they drown themselves in their work, and then they come home and they drown themselves in drink, you know, to kind of suppress the reality.
In that age bracket is just awful. And there's so many men in that age bracket committing suicide, and they have teenage children and, you know, like... It just goes on and on and on. And we need to stop making them out to be all bad guys. Maybe we can just throw a shitload of compassion and actually bring them forward and let them know that there's another way. They don't have to just be financially successful. They don't have to just be physically strong. They don't have to, you know, they can be a loving human, and that they will be able to invite more life in, you know.
Well, that's fascinating. I absolutely love that. I mean, look, we could talk about this stuff for hours on end, Helen. but I think we're about an hour and 40 minutes into it based on the clock here. So we've been going for a while. But so where can people hear more about you then?
Well, the Gentleman's Secret website and everything is all under construction at the moment, because it's got some pretty cool stuff coming. Okay. But find me on helenglover.com.au at the moment. My email address is connect@helenglover.com.au.
Excellent stuff. And I'll put links to those, or I'll put links in the description anyway to your website and stuff like that as well. So Helen, I have to say, it's been an absolutely incredible conversation, extremely enlightening. You've definitely given me a lot to think about. And I really, really appreciate having you on today. So thank you so much. Did you enjoy it?
I did. Thanks, Nigel. You just got me going. I just went bleh.
That's what I said to you. I said to you, just let it out. You know, just let it out. So I'm so happy that you're able to do that today. Guys. So hope you enjoyed the episode today with Helen Glover. Hope you guys got some good value and insights from it as I did. So once again, thank you so much for joining me on this episode today, and I'll talk to you soon.